Thanks so much for joining us today on WPR News. Larry Mueller here. We're appreciating Wisconsin's soil resources here on WPR News. And Jamie Patton is with us to help us in that task. She's the acting state agronomist and soil health coordinator with the Wisconsin Natural Resources Conservation Service. As we talk with her, I hope you'll join in with your questions. Maybe you have some questions about your own soil's health. Let us know how you've improved the soil in your area. Give us a call. The number, 800-642-1234, 1-800-642-1234, or send an email to talk@wpr.org. That's talk@wpr.org. Jamie Patton, welcome. Thanks for joining us today.
Thanks for having me, Larry. I'm excited to be here.
So what's your role? You're the acting state agronomist and soil health coordinator for Wisconsin NRCS. What do you do in that role?
I do a lot of things. So as the agronomist, my job is to help a lot of our field offices with putting conservation practices on the ground. So I serve as a technical expert, you know, trying to provide those recommendations of how we put in cover crops, you know, what kind of tillage might we use in these situations, you know, how do we best utilize nutrients in the environment. As a soil health coordinator, I get to talk about soil all day long, and that is my favorite thing to do. Hopefully that comes through.
You know, I was thinking back to when I took a soils UW-Madison class when I was an undergraduate in soils. I wasn't majoring in soils, but I had to take the class, or I needed to take the class, wanted to. And kids would, in this, who were majoring in soils, would some, I'd tell them what I was taking, and they'd say, oh, you're taking Dirt 300.
Those are fighting words.
And I tell you what, you would not say that in front of a professor, for sure. And maybe you can tell us the difference between soil and dirt.
I would love to talk about the difference between soil and dirt, because dirt is a dirty word. We don't use that. We only in very specific situations. So soil, right? And the key with soil, and I can give you the textbook definition, right? It's a dynamic natural body composed of minerals, organic matter, air, and water that acts on and is acted upon by living organisms, right? And that's the key, is making sure that people understand that soil is alive and that we need to treat it as such. It's an ecosystem and it serves a purpose. It has function. Dirt, on the other hand, we typically talk about it as what you're tracking into the house on the bottom of your shoes or what you vacuum up out of the car, right? So soil is that natural body that keeps us healthy, keeps us breathing, keeps us fed.
So we need to keep it healthy. And why? Why is healthy soil important in our state?
And this is what's really fun. When you and I went to college, we did not use these words, right? Soil health is a fairly new concept, meaning it's come around in about the last 20 or so years as we've understood and starting to understand, we don't quite understand all of it just yet, that the soil is alive and that plethora of living organisms out there in the soil and what they do for us, from nutrient cycling to helping our soil aggregate. So when a soil aggregates, it gets into those little clumps, right? We all know if we pick up a soil and it falls through our hands and it looks like chocolate cake crumbs or cookie crumbs, that's a good soil. All of that involves biology. So when we talk about soil health, we oftentimes concentrate on that biological portion that we didn't know much about when I went to college, you know, a few decades ago. We focused on chemistry. Now we focus on those living organisms and how they make a soil do what it needs to do.
And it does so many things in the ecosystem. I mean, it regulates water, for one thing.
Without a doubt. And so when we think about, you know, plants, I enjoyed listening to your last guest, right? Talking about the plethora of things that we can, right? As we think about food production out there and we think about those plants, right? We always think about those plants get from the soil their wants: water, air, nutrients, temperature and toxin regulation, and a structure for support. And so when we think about that soil, that regulation of water and that supply of water over the season is key. They don't take up water typically through their leaves. They're going to take it up through the root system. So we have to have a soil that holds water. We have to have a soil that regulates nutrients, right? That cycles nutrients out of that compost that we're adding. You know, this composted manure cycling naturally out of the organic matter. All of that comes into play when we talk about soil. And so it's really key that we manage that beautiful natural body in a way that we keep it functioning, so that we have food, that we have air, and that, right, as we think about all the rain that we've gotten, all that water soaks into the ground, or a lot of that water soaks into the ground rather than running off, creating flooding and erosion.
I've got a lot, many more comments relating to that, but Nancy in Duluth has a question. So let's go there. Nancy, hi. Thank you for calling. What's on your mind?
Hi. I love your show. I'm so glad to hear it again because I didn't have radio for a while. So I used to live in southern Minnesota where there's a lot of soil problems. And there's a group that's still active called Land Stewardship Project, and they help farmers and growers take good care of the soil and keep it that way. And here's what their motto is: let's stop treating our soil like dirt.
I love that. Well, Nancy, thanks for calling. Jamie, are you kind of familiar with a land stewardship program?
We are, and there's a lot of wonderful, great nonprofits out there that are really embracing this idea of soil health and helping everyone from landowners through farmers figure out how they can promote soil health on all sorts of scales, from the backyard up through fields. So, yeah, that is a good mantra to follow. Don't treat your soil like dirt.
Nancy, thank you very much for calling. Appreciate your call. We are thinking about soil. You know, our constant concerns relate to pollution, and I think soil plays a role in filtering pollutants, does it not?
Without a doubt. And what's really exciting about soil is most of us don't recognize that soil is charged, right? It's dominantly negatively charged. And why that's important is it helps to filter out many of the chemicals, whether they be nutrients or other types of chemicals that are introduced into the soil system. So from the impact of that charge on the soil, helping to hold those contaminants in the soil, and then that biology coming into play to help to decompose and detoxify some of those chemicals, or if we're talking about nutrients, utilize those nutrients and put them back into the plant cycle. It's key, like I said. And so, yeah, soils are nature's recycling center, right? If they weren't, right, we'd be above our heads in, you know, dead cricket bodies or whatever, you know, and leaves and everything else, right? Those things disappear. We take that for granted, but that's that nature's recycling center helping to detoxify and recycle a lot of what we add to the soil.
Let me put it this way. How much would you consider soil to be a renewable resource?
I don't, right? So this is where we oftentimes talk about renewable versus non-renewable. In our lifetime, right, the definition, I think, of a renewable resource is something that we can regenerate in our lifetime. Depending upon the climate, scientists believe it takes somewhere between maybe 700 and 1,000 years to form 1 inch of soil. So a little bit of soil loss is going to take our lifetime or more to replace. So it is a non-renewable resource. While I can regenerate what I have, right, I can restore their fertility and I can restore that biological community. If the soil itself is lost, it's lost. I'm not going to see it come back in my lifetime.
And I was trying to remember, if you took a bathtub and filled it up with soil, that'd be about a ton of soil, wouldn't it?
Oh, goodness. Sure. I've never done that. Maybe that's what I'll do after the show.
Art Peterson might have told me that one time, soil scientist at the UW, rest his soul. But I was thinking about the tons of topsoil that may be lost, by perhaps poor conservation methods over the course of a year. And it can be into the tons of soil per acre.
It can. So when we think about it, I'm more versed in thinking about 5 tons. So I know what that looks like when spread out over an acre, right? It's about the thickness of a dime. And so when we talk about losing soil from our gardens, our yards, from our agricultural fields, when you think about the thickness of a dime, it's not that much, right? And that's oftentimes what we consider to be, for many of our soils, tolerable soil loss. So, and...
Yeah, if you spread 5 bathtubs full of soil, that'd probably be about the thickness of of a dime over an acre. We're going to talk some more with Jamie Patton, acting state agronomist, and I hope you'll join in as we talk soil with her. Number to call, 800-642-1234. Email to talk at WPR.org. We're going to take a quick look at the news. We'll find out what else is in store for us. And then we will be back with Jamie Patton. I'm Larry Mueller for WPR News. We're getting an update about soil quality in our state today. Larry Mueller here. Thanks for being with us on WPR News. Jamie Patton with us. She's the acting state agronomist and soil health coordinator with the Wisconsin Natural Resources Conservation Service. So maybe you wonder what soil is exactly, and maybe how to improve it. Give a call. The number is 800-642-1234. Email to talk at WPR.org. And we've got callers online, so let's go to the phones and to Judy and Tomahawk first. Judy, hi.
Well, hi. A little while ago, I read a book about the Great Hinckley, Minnesota Fire, which I think occurred around the late 1800s. And in the book, the author said that they lost 12 feet of topsoil due to the high temperatures. And I read that quite a few times. I couldn't believe it. Is that possible to have 12 feet of topsoil?
That's where I'm going to have to read that book. when we think about it, what might have happened? And so what I'm trying to think, so soil is mineral, right? It's little rocks, so sand, salts, and clays. So fire doesn't really have an impact on, you know, making rocks disappear. What it does do, and those high temperatures can make organic matter so that those dead plant and animal remains disappear. So what I could imagine is what they might have been talking about are those peatlands, right? Those bogs where we have large amounts of organic matter, tens of feet of organic matter. Then potentially if a fire came through, that organic matter would have been burnt away, and that's how they might have lost those 12 feet. But I'm not familiar with this situation, but we hear about this in history, right? So when we think about those stories coming out of Ireland where they, you know, they mined the peat and dried it out and then used it to heat their homes in the winter, it's the same concept. And Minnesota does have similar peat soils in some areas as to those situations. So
yeah,
that's
could be. What's the normal depth of, let's say, the average depth of soil in our state?
So that's a good question. So what we've been talking about is topsoil, and so topsoil is kind of is the common person's description of that upper dark layer, right? So soil scientists have a name for it. We're really creative. It's called the A horizon. that topsoil, that dark layer, is going to depend upon how that soil forms. So soils that typically form under prairies, so that would have formed under grasses over thousands of years, could have a foot, 2 foot, 3 foot thick or more dark layer on the soil surface. In Wisconsin, many of our soils formed under forests. And because of how that situation sits up and the tree roots don't die back, our forest soils tend to have only a few inches of topsoil. So it really depends upon the history and how that soil formed over time as to how much topsoil it has, plus where it's on the landscape, how we manage it, so on and so forth. So tough question to answer.
Judy, thank you very much for your question. Mike and Poinette, what's on your mind?
Hi. Well, as plants need soil to grow, I thought this was an interesting topic because I'm dealing with a plant that I'm trying to get rid of. And I'm wondering if there's something that I can do with my soil to assist me with that. I have daughter on my shoreline, and it's really tough to get rid of. I've been pulling it, and I don't really want to use herbicide on it, but I just thought maybe there's something I could do to modify the soil so that daughter wouldn't grow in it, or it would hinder it a little.
So that's going to be a tough one. So those shoreline soils are tend to be very sensitive, and we have to manage them appropriately, right? Because they're helping us to filter those nutrients and that water before it enters into the water body. So while I am not an expert on daughter control, I think that is probably your best bet. It's not going to be a changing the soil itself, but a little old labor there of pulling that daughter out. Unless someone else knows better, this is not usually...
Yeah,
not usually how I would approach controlling weeds is changing the soil.
Yeah, I had a friend who was got some help from some friends and did a little pulling contest. And once you got it pulled and cleared, then it's easier to, you know, when they come back to pick them up and pick them out as they reoccur.
Right. Because I could make recommendations so that the daughter wouldn't grow. The problem is nothing else would either. So that's not what we want to do.
So. Mike, sorry, but keep pulling. Keep trying. Brian in Madison, your turn. Hi, Brian.
Hi. A number of years ago, I used to go down to Verona Road, and there was a small mountain of black earth from the composting efforts of the community. I would go there and I would see literally scores of people filling up the backs of their station wagons and trailers. That has long gone and it hasn't been replaced. And wondering what efforts this good state of Wisconsin could make to reintroduce composting on a community basis for those of us who don't compost. I personally compost and have for many years, but there's lots of us that don't. Thank you.
All right. Thanks for calling, Brian. What about it, Jamie? I'm assuming there are still communities doing that.
There are. And so particularly, so I'm not from Madison, so I live up north. So a lot of our communities, it's a great way to recycle the leaves and sticks that come out of our urban areas. And so a lot of municipalities are working on composting initiatives. The challenge is it takes labor, right? So to make sure that compost, you just don't let it sit and it does its thing. It has to be tended. It has to be managed, watered, turned, so on or so forth. So there are still several municipalities out there that are doing this. Like I said, it's going to take some funding efforts and some grassroots efforts to get this to flourish, and probably a better understanding, right, of how good compost and recycling those materials can be for improving soil health, right? So it helps to create a sponge, right? Soils hold water better. It's providing nutrients. And again, as we go back to that key thing of that soil being alive, that compost is just food for those billions, trillions of organisms that I love so much in those soils. So it's a great way to feed those organisms as well. So compost is super beneficial. That is, but getting municipalities to take on composting again can be quite a challenge.
Brian, thank you very much for calling. Are there any good T-shirts that advertise and extol the virtues of soil?
There are. So they tend to be a little nerdy, right? So soil scientists, you'll see them all over. My favorite one. So if you're familiar, I'm sure you might be familiar, Larry, with Lust, the windblown sediment, right? So yeah. I have one that says looking for lust in all the wrong places, right? Because it only occurs on, yeah. But like I said, they tend to be pretty nerdy. Otherwise, I have a wonderful one, the Anago silt loam shirt, right? So if people don't know, we have a state soil. It's the Anago silt loam. It has its own song. So if you don't have your own Anago silt loam shirt, I encourage you to go out and find one and represent the beautiful soils here in Wisconsin.
I live a couple of blocks from where Francis Hole, UW soil scientist, lived. There's a plaque out there recognizing him, and he was he got his students organized and got Anago silt loam as the state soil. And I think I've mentioned on the show in the past, he used to bring a violin to his classes, and and he'd say, "Well, here's what sandy soil sounds like," and he'd do sandy soil, and here's what antagosil loam sounds like, and he'd do that. He was a great lecturer, and oftentimes his classes would be filled with the seats all filled, and then a lot of people who weren't even in the class just standing back there listening to him speak. He's quite a guy.
Fantastic. I never got to meet him, unfortunately. So,
antagosil loam. What's so good about antagosil loam?
It's a beautiful soil. So, like I said, I believe they chose it because it is what's considered prime farmland. So it's a prime. That's the mantra. It's a prime Wisconsin soil, meaning that it has the biological, chemical, and physical properties that make it good for agricultural production. So we're going to see a particular near Antigo, right? A lot of our wonderful seed potatoes are being grown on the Antigo silt loam itself. But if you ever have a chance, right, there's a beautiful placard. If you can't go to Dr. Hole's house, there's a beautiful placard monumenting the Antigo silt loam as a state soil up in the town of Antigo at the airport. So
there you go.
Again, nerdy things, right?
nerdy things indeed. What are the most common soil types that we, of course, Antigo silt loam is one of them, but what else do we have here in our state?
So when we think about soils, much like biology, we have a classification system. And so the highest order of classification is what we call are the orders, right? And so we have in the state of Wisconsin an alpha soil. So we have these beautiful forest-derived soils that have that thinner topsoil like I talked about, and they have this heavy clay accumulation in the B horizons. Those take up much of the state. Those who are lucky enough to live down in the Madison area and in southern Wisconsin, you're going to have this another kind of soil called a mollisol. It's those beautiful dark prairie-derived soils, like we talked about, having thick topsoil and make it easier for us to garden in and grow our lawns in, to farm in. And if you go way up north, we have these wonderful soils called spodosols, which are just wildly beautiful, bright white colors in the subsoil. You don't really want to farm them or grow vegetables on them. They're best left in their native tree vegetation. But we have a very diverse array of soils in Wisconsin, and that's why I'm here, right? There's always something to learn.
John was actually wondering in an email, what is your day-to-day job like?
What is my day-to-day job like? So what I do is I for the NRCS, the Natural Resources Conservation Service, we are a voluntary conservation organization, right? And we have government programs to help put conservation on the ground. So as a technical person, I'm out learning the science. I'm learning what producers are doing, and I'm helping to provide guidance for when our field office staff, when our conservationists go out and help make recommendations to those farmers. So I'm the let's call it in the most simple terms, kind of like the scientific liaison. I'm taking the greatest research that's coming out of the country, that's coming out of UW, and I'm formulating that into an action plan for the state of Wisconsin.
Listener called, couldn't stay with us, wonders, do chemicals from fireworks affect soil health?
They can. And so when we think about anything that we add to the soil can potentially increase or decrease soil health, right? It's however they impact soil biology. So the nice thing about soils is they tend to be pretty resilient. So while fireworks and the leftover chemicals that are oftentimes they're going to be salts that are left over after the combustion process, the soil is going to be impacted in the immediate area as well as in that immediate time period. But over time, those organisms are adapted to oftentimes detoxify, to utilize, and water is going to help flush out those salts over time. And so while we might have an immediate effect on many of the things that we add to the soil, over the long term, the soil oftentimes can heal itself or take care of itself and regenerate itself over time.
Many years ago, I worked on an agency for international development program in Jamaica, because they were losing in some of their hillier areas of the country, I think it was 30 tons of topsoil per acre per year. And so the as a communications person, my role was to help in education and so forth. But I'm wondering, and I can't remember the how many tons of per acre we were losing in Wisconsin. I think that's gotten a lot better over the years.
It has. And you mentioned me right before we went to break. You heard me mention the words tolerable soil loss. So tolerable soil loss is the amount of soil that we're estimated to be able to lose and still maintain the productivity of the soil. And so to put that 30 tons in perspective, Larry, that you just said, many of our soils in Wisconsin have a tolerable soil loss of somewhere between 1 and 5 tons. So nothing like 30 tons. Like that's losing soil at 6 times the rate in which it would naturally regenerate itself and maintain productivity. So in the state of Wisconsin, with changes to increased grazing, to the things such as cover crops that you see more and more on the ground, growing some of another plant just simply to keep the ground covered. And in, during those non-crop production times of the year, over winter, for example, or looking at perennial vegetation, right? Making sure that we have roots in the ground all year round. All of these things are helping to protect that soil, and our actual soil erosion losses are depending upon, are going to vary by parts of the state, are oftentimes in that 1 to 3 tons per acre, well within maintaining productivity. So things have gotten a lot better over time as we understand.
Has technology advanced much in this area of soil protection and so forth?
Without a doubt. And so what's really fun about soil technologies is, you know, if you want to talk about cover crops being a technology, right, when we came out of the Dust Bowl, right? So, you know, the 1938 Yearbook of Agriculture, one of the ways they had prescribed to help build soil after the Dust Bowl was to use cover crops. And then we kind of forgot about it for a few decades, but it's back. And why I say they're new technologies is we're getting new varieties out there. So they're breeding them to be more cold tolerant. So many of these crops that we use as cover crops, and they're fitting into our Wisconsin rotation system. So it may be something such as new genetics, new plants that we're bringing in that are helping us to keep that soil covered and in place and to keep it healthy over time. Or it may just simply be some of the new equipment that we're using. So a lot of the listeners have probably heard about no-till, right? And it's not tilling the ground before you plant your next crop. Well, that takes a lot of technology. There's a lot of sophisticated equipment that is required to get a seed placed in the ground without tilling it. So over the last few decades, the equipment that we use for agriculture has helped us conserve the land as well, because we're doing less disturbance and we're able to utilize some of these practices that we know, such as cover crops that build soil health over time.
It's amazing what some of that equipment can do as you drive over the land and locating fertilizer or nutrient deficiencies or excesses from one yard to the next.
And there's this new, so if you live in an area, it's called 360 rain. It's one of the new irrigation technologies that we have out there. It's autonomous. So it just goes out and it wanders around the field, but drives up and down the rows, but not on the crops, applying water or applying water and nutrients all on its own.
So, and where it's needed.
And where it's needed. So autonomy is coming to many of our practices, which allows, like you said, us to specifically place amendments where they're needed.
And, you know, this applies to as well to our Wisconsin gardeners, our home gardeners. When it comes to, I was thinking cover crops, because we just had a question last week on cover crops. Somebody wondering about planting, I forgot, was it barley? I can't remember. Yeah, but go talk about that from a home gardener perspective.
Sure. So when we think about soil, we talk about it, again, it's kind of what I've been talking about the whole time. It's alive. So I want to make sure and feed it over the winter. So home gardeners, you know, when we take out those last crops, that is a perfect time to plant another crop in there that we're not going to harvest. We're just going to either leave it or it's going to winter kill, but it's there to build organic matter and feed those soil microbes. So things, if they were talking such as winter barley, right?
Barley.
We can,
yeah.
Yep. Wheat or winter rye is something that's used very commonly in Wisconsin because it's a little more cold tolerant, but it's after, so the, for that home gardener, after we get that, that garden ready. And as we're starting to think about putting it to bed is we would just seed that cereal rye on top, kind of rake it in lightly, and it'll actually germinate in the, before, winter comes. So it'll germinate down to about 637 degrees or even less. And then it stays alive over winter. And those roots are helping to feed that soil biology. And as soon as it warms up in the spring, it starts to grow and it provides that beautiful soil cover. We can use it as a living mulch. There's all sorts of wonderful things. Putting legumes in these cover crop mixes, if we get them in early, are going to help us supply free nitrogen to our next crop because they're legume crops and they can fix that nitrogen. So cover crops, oftentimes we utilize them in home gardens, not only to provide nutrients, to improve soil health, but like I said, to add organic matter over time and to suppress those weeds that we all just really don't like to have in our garden.
And I think with cover crops, you need to, they need to be cut or removed before they go to seed.
Most definitely. And so this is where, for example, if you're putting in many of the cover crops after you your harvest season, like I said, choosing something that winter kills, so it grows in the fall and then it gets frost terminated, is a great way to add a little bit more organic matter. And if it does overwinter, right? So if for those who are comfortable using a herbicide, use a herbicide. Otherwise, they can easily, if they're at the smaller growth stages, you can just till them in and get ready for your next crop. But lots of options there. And so there's no one prescription. That's why I'm kind of stumbling here, is knowing what our goals are. And then we have lots of options for cover crops and how we want to use them to meet our gardening goals.
And somebody else is wondering, what's the difference between our connection, I'm sorry, between the carbon in the atmosphere and the carbon in the soil? Interesting.
So it is an interesting question. So it is a cycle, right? So when we think about, I talked about the nutrient cycle, the water cycle, but it is also the carbon cycle. So when we think about those plants, right, they're taking carbon dioxide from the atmosphere, converting them into sugar into their own plant bodies. And then as that vegetation dies and decomposes, dies and gets into the soil, it decomposes. Some of it will go back to the atmosphere as carbon dioxide, but some of that carbon stays in the soil as the soil organic matter, that dark peaty material that we've been talking about. Soil is intricate, is very much part of, I can't get that word out right now, is very much part of that carbon cycle, helping to store carbon. So if we can increase the amount of organic matter in our soil, we can increase carbon storage. And if we lose that organic matter, right, through decomposition, then that carbon goes right back into the atmosphere. So it's a tight little circle right there. They're very much linked.
I'm thinking about the intense weather we've had recently, and I think our soil health, very important, given the kinds of weather changes we're seeing.
Without a doubt. And so often one of our measures of soil health, if we can go out and we look at our soil and it looks like that chocolate cake structure, it looks like that cookie crumb or cottage cheese, we know that our biology is working and that we have probably a good, healthy soil. Why that's so important with these heavy rainfalls is those cookie crumbs, those cottage cheese type structures, the soil aggregates, they have pore space in between. And the more pore space we can have in a soil, the better water infiltrates. And if water is moving into the soil, then it's not moving off. And if it's not moving off, that means that we're reducing erosion and we're reducing the potential flood impacts. So soils, maintaining soil health, maintaining the soil's capacity to accept or infiltrate water and then store that water is key as we start to see these intense rainfall events, and maintaining that soil on the landscape where it belongs.
Jamie, a pleasure talking with you. Will you come back and be with us again sometime down the road? Love to have you.
Without a doubt. And maybe next time we'll sing the Antigo Silt Loan song.
We'll do a duet.
Yeah, it'll be scary. Hopefully you're a better singer than I am.
It'd be pretty scary. Maybe we'll have Lee Rayburn look up the Antigo Silt Loan song that somebody else. Oh, I know that Francis Hull knew that song very, very well. And maybe we can find him singing that song. In the meantime, Jamie, thanks again. Appreciate it very much.
Thank you.
Jamie Patton, acting state agronomist and soil health coordinator with the Wisconsin Natural Resources Conservation Service. Going to turn our attention to baseball and the Milwaukee Brewers next. I'm Larry Mueller for WPR News.
Salty, no, Wisconsin's crops and livestock grow, and forests too on Antigo, and forests too on Antigo.